Welcome to Oak City Church, a family of learners, lovers, and givers sent. For more information, visit us online at oakcitychurch.com. Let us know if we can help you in any way. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for being here this morning. We are in a series called The Power of God. And last week, I spoke through God's power to rescue and how God's our rescue. And we talked about the story of the Exodus, which is the formative story of Israel in the Old Testament about God rescued them from their slavery. And thank you. And I just asked some questions like, have you been rescued? Are you being rescued? Will you be rescued? And are you then participating in God's rescue? And so coming off of that, I had a story, someone who's been at church for over a year now, whose story I really wanted to tell, and because it's great and God's worked in great ways. And it fits along with this idea of a rescue. And Susan Henson is going to, Susan, you can come on up wherever. Oh, she's a front row person, so she's here. And she leads a ministry that we've been partnering with as a church, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. She, I don't know what this, there we go. Are we good here? No, that one is, it gets a little hitchy. Yeah, we're good. There you go. You take this. Everybody say hi, Susan. So she leads a ministry that, and we'll talk about this in a minute, that in a nutshell, there are women in prison that have babies, and so she'll take care of their babies while they're still in prison and then take care of the moms and the babies once they're out of prison. So that's not like your typical ministry, and just it's great. Like, it's a fantastic ministry, and it's a fantastic story about how God led her to that. And it's called Pharaoh's Daughter. That's the name of her ministry. And so for a handful of reasons, I thought right after we talked about the Exodus would be appropriate time to talk to Susan about that. And in a series about the power of God, because it's really a story about how God worked in Susan's life over time and then called her to be a part of what he's doing in the lives of some other folks. So we'll just kind of briefly go through your, you grew up in a Christian home.
I did.
And so yes. You became a Christian pretty early.
Pretty early. Can you hear me? It's
just the just got to keep it close okay, to your close to your mouth.
Yeah. So grew up in a Christian home. You know, spent my summer times at VBS where my mom taught, and so I don't remember the questions she asked, but I do remember at 5 years old just feeling compelled to get on my knees and ask Jesus into my heart. So did that at five, and you know, as a 5 year old can do, and God remembered it.
So. You said you grew up in, like, Virginia.
Yeah.
Norfolk.
In the Norfolk area.
In Norfolk.
Yeah. Yep.
And it was, you said it wasn't Baptist, but it was Baptist-y. How many people grew up
roots.
In a Baptist or Baptist-y environment? So it's just a lot of people. I'm from the North. We don't have Baptists, so I don't have the same hang-ups that everybody down here is. But you were telling me that you were saving yourself for marriage, like you stayed away from premarital sexual stuff because...
It could lead to dancing. Okay, we have some Baptists in the room.
Just enough to make that work.
Right?
If you're not Baptist, you can ask somebody about that joke later.
We didn't rehearse that.
Yeah. And so, but then you got to your late teenage years. You kind of went on your own a little bit, put God on the shelf. But
I did.
Kind of a standard deal.
Yeah.
And then you brought him back. You got married relatively
yep,
young.
Yep, I was 20. And I think my kids all got that message. Like, I've only got one that's married, and he was almost 30. The others are like, nope, mama said, don't get married early.
And when you got married, like, you took God off the shelf and were like, hey, I'm married. And you married, I mean, you had known this guy forever, and your families knew each other, and so you thought you knew what you were getting into.
Thought it was very safe. I thought, gosh, if this marriage thing doesn't work out, at least we'll be friends. We were always friends. I mean, I've never not known this person in my life, so it'll be fine.
But you quickly discerned that it wasn't what you thought it was going to be.
At all. And I didn't take God off the shelf 1 second too soon. Of course, you know, you think you put him on the shelf. He never leaves your heart. So he wasn't really on the shelf. But I needed him desperately in, well, my entire marriage, really.
Yeah. And you said you realized pretty quick he was a mean guy.
Yeah.
And abusive in a variety of ways.
Yep. Yeah. So I had, I mean, it drove me to my knees. So, you know, that's a good thing about being in a hard place is when you have God, it does drive you to your knees. And so I spent a lot of time just praying desperate prayers like, God, please make him kind or give me a duck's back so I won't feel all this is coming at me. And God honored it. He didn't honor the make him kind part, but he did honor the duck's back part. I think that's why I'm sitting here today and you're not having to visit me in an institution or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you said he was physically, like, abusive once, really, and then you're like, well, that's not going to happen again. But emotionally, he kind of wore you down over time.
About every 5 years, he would try something physical. And somehow I grew up with this standard that physical abuse was wrong. But I didn't get the emotional abuse is just as wrong. So somehow that was tolerated. So day in and day out, it was pretty much, you know, emotional abuse. And then every now and then he'd get up to this line of physical abuse. Never the same thing twice, because he learned his lesson the last time he physically did anything. But it just wasn't good at all. And that kind of emotional abuse starts to make you smaller. And so whatever weapons you might come into the marriage with from having been raised in a relatively healthy family gets worn down, worn down, worn down. I just felt, when I look back at it, I think I just became smaller and smaller and smaller until, you know, I was the, you know, don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain, you know, this little guy making all this puffing and flaming, but it wasn't good.
So just fast forwarding that, you guys divorce after about 20 years. You've got four young children. And so you are the single mom of four young children. And he is not very active.
Not. No. More at the beginning and then just disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You described him as kind of a hippie.
Yeah.
Living that way.
Yeah. I would say Rolling Stone. However, someone said, what? You were married to one of the Rolling Stones? I'm like, okay, you don't get that. But yeah, okay. Yeah, a Rolling Stone.
And so then you're depending on God in a different way. And you used the picture of umbrellas.
Yeah.
That was instructive for that.
Yeah. So, you know, I'd been raised in a Christian home, as I said, and that, you know, the normal order of God is God, then husband, then wife, then kids, and then God blesses the husband who blesses the wife, who blesses the children. You know, old school as that may be, that's how I was raised. And so, you know, I stayed at home. We did everything from home birth to home school to home everything else. And so that doesn't pay well for any of you who know that. So, you know, it hit me that, oh my gosh, I have four kids and he's out of the picture. I guess I got to get a job. And my prayer is like, God, how am I going to do this? You have taken that peace away. You know, I was thinking God was like following him and he was going to keep blessing him and then I get nothing. And God very quickly, even through scripture, showed me that, I used to bless you through your husband and bless you through their father. He has chosen to walk away. Well, now I get to bless you directly. It's going to be me and you. I will be the husband and the father of your children. And he did.
And in a series on the power of God, like there were times where you saw God's power and his hand in powerful ways.
Yeah. From the rent being forgiven on any given month to groceries literally showing up on my doorstep. I, to this day, don't know who brought those. And it's not one time. It would be, and of course, you know, you look back and you're like, that was the week where I said, okay, God, this is it. Like, you know, that widow and the son is like, this is my last loaf of bread. And then we're going to just lie down and die. And that's the day that there were bags of groceries on our porch. Don't know who they came from.
And a job.
And a job. Yeah. A job showed up. And interestingly, it was what I felt comfortable. You know, you go from being at home all the time with your kids all the time. You put them in school and then you got to get a job. And all I'm thinking about in my mind is latchkey kids. Oh my gosh. They're the ones who always get in trouble. So God provided a job for me where I could go in at 9 o'clock and get off at 1 o'clock. Now, that also isn't a lot of money. It's part-time. And somehow God paid all the bills. I was home with my children when they got off the bus. They weren't latchkey kids. And it was also, I'm an extrovert, and I found this secretary job at a church, real small, old church. And I spent a lot of days by myself. And I thought, I'm going to just shrivel up and die. But that's exactly how God, he used that opportunity of a lot of alone time to minister to me. And people would swing by the church, and it would be exactly what I needed that day. I can't imagine working anywhere else in these early days of separation and divorce than in this very nurturing, you know, it was a Methodist church, and there were a lot of old people. But they would come and pray for me or reach out to me or say, how you doing? You know, so they cared for me a lot.
So all that is your background. God provided for you in ways. You were a single mom. And so that can give you some empathy for these mothers who are separated from their children and are single moms. But that's not really what got Pharaoh's daughter going. That's kind of like some background noise for what got Pharaoh's daughter going. There's an event that happened that was not one that you saw coming or what anybody would ever want that really led to Pharaoh's daughter happening. Yeah. And that was...
That was my daughter being arrested and sentenced to prison. That was a total shock. I mean, around our dinner table, it was what college you're going to, what, you know, what career you're going to have. That was what we talked about. This kid in her senior year decided, nope, not doing a high school diploma. I'm like, what? How's that not college? Yeah, so she went, she just kind of, she'd always been the kid that marched to a different drum, so... Yeah, but that phone call was not one I anticipated at all.
And you said you were just telling me this morning. You were with extended family down at the beach at a town called what's the
Oriental.
Does anybody know this town, Oriental?
You know it. You may think you know it, but if you really know it, it's a drinking town with a fishing problem. So, anyways,
that's the first time I'd ever heard that.
Yeah, cute little quaint town. Okay, some of you guys know it, but there's an old. You know, like sleeps 25 people kind of home. And my kids had kind of grown up going there. So we had the opportunity to go again to the same house and had extended family. It was like a big family reunion thing. And so one by one, my kids were like, yeah, I might not be able to stay all week, but I'll come some days. And then my daughter had said, yeah, it's like part of my childhood. I'll be there at some point that week, probably closer to the weekend. So Friday night, I get this call from my ex-husband because the internet is awful out there, and so I guess she couldn't get me with her one phone call. So she called her dad, and then he called me. And so I get this news that, I mean, it was shocking. You know, Abby is in jail. Like, what? What do you mean she's in jail? So he gave me the little bit of details that he knew at the time, and we spent the rest of the weekend. I was kind of stuck there. We sort of convoyed there, and plus there was nothing I could do. Talk about feeling out of control. You know, this is not when you go and sweet talk the teacher and then they give your kid a better grade. That was not happening. So, we spent the weekend praying and then.
And so it's a significant, I mean, it's a trafficking charge. It's a significant
charge.
Yeah,
it's significant.
But
it's a felony.
What happens in that is that she spends time in jail. She ends up going to prison. She spends time in jail. When she's in jail, she sees a documentary.
Yeah, she does. First of all, she came to Christ in this. So. Always a silver lining, right? So, but she called me one day. She called me every night, and she said, Mom, she was so excited. Mom, I just saw this documentary. It's like from New York or something, but, you know, they have this outreach that the moms who are pregnant and in prison, and I think I blacked out at that point. I never in my life put pregnant and incarcerated in the same sentence. So somehow when I came back to, she was still talking, and she said, so... Where are the North Carolina babies going? We got to do something about this. So I'm listening to her enthusiasm, and she's like, Mom, you know, we love babies. Our whole family does, and we've always wanted to have a family business, and we got to do this. We got to do this. So, I mean, out of the one side of my mouth, I'm listening and responding to her, and the other, the brakes are going on. I'm like, what? I'm like staring 50 really close. My kids, I got all but one kid out of the house. I'm like, the next kid I help raise is going to be my grandchild that I can take back to mom and daddy. And that's Yeah. Full-time parenting these babies by myself, not doing it.
She actually said, yeah, at first I wasn't quite on board with that. And then she said, really, on any given day, I'm not quite sure if I'm going to get back on board with it, which is just ministry, honestly.
Yeah, there's parts of it with that.
But it took, I mean, you were reluctant at first.
Oh,
and
very.
Then it went further for her.
Yeah.
I mean, she went to prison and she had like more experiences that.
Yeah. So later when she was actually sentenced and went to prison. So anyways, to wrap up that other part, eventually God got to my heart and I like couldn't sleep at night. I'm like, okay, I've got to do this. I can't imagine not saying, you know, saying no to God. But anyways, so later, and I didn't find this out until she got out. So to add more fuel to the fire, when you first go to prison, you're in sort of a safe house when you first get there so that you kind of get used to the ropes. And they also put pregnant women in the same kind of safe dorm. So here my daughter is in this dorm with pregnant women. And here's the drill. You know, somebody starts moaning in the night, and so they call the COs, the correction officers. They come, they haul her off to the medical center, and in a couple of days, she comes back empty-handed. And Abby said there's like this vacuum that sucks the very energy out of the room. And you don't know what to say because the room is also filled with more pregnant women who are going, yep, that's going to be me any minute. And they're just distraught because these women have either sent their baby back to a family member, which, you know, just imagine what their background was. They may be sending this baby back to the same environment that they were raised in that kind of sent them to where they are today. So that could be a known danger. Or you can relinquish your parental rights, send them to foster care, and hope that they're there when you get out. Because in this state, a child can be adopted without your permission. You get a letter in the mail going, oh, by the way, your kid is now owned, you know, is in another family. Whole last name, whole everything. So you have no say in that. And probably the worst part is, because that doesn't happen real often, it is a threat and they know it. But when you give your child to foster care, you have to be at a certain level of stability in order to get your child back. And these women come out of prison. I mean, imagine some of their industries that they've been in to get into prison. So drugs, prostitution, things like that. And they don't just walk up to DSS and say, okay, I'll take my kid back now. They have to have a job. They have to have housing, a car, or at least a bus line or something. So some of these women, though their kids may still be in foster care, they will never get their children back. And while they're in there, they don't know where they are. So this is the story is over and over again. Yeah, after my kids grew up, they reached out to me because they were allowed. They were out of the system then. So this is the demise of these women. So it's, you know, they know what they're up against when they leave to go to the hospital to have their baby.
And so you start this ministry, and one of the things you said that I just thought was totally noteworthy is every Sunday morning at 6:30 in the morning, since you said February 2011 is when you started the ministry, you've had a conference call where you've prayed.
Yep.
And so you've had a prayer team, and that's like been the consistent thing from the very beginning to 6:30 every Sunday morning.
Every
you have a conference
Sunday
call
morning.
And you pray. You also noted that your mother-in-law is on that.
Yeah.
Which is just backing through a whole bunch of other parts of the story, but is intriguing. So you did that. You worked with a lawyer. He told you to get a 501c3 established.
Yep.
And so you spend, you have a board, you get a board together.
Yeah.
And you get to a, like, is this ever going to happen?
Oh,
like, you
years.
Spend years getting this thing ready.
Yeah. I felt ready a year or two afterwards. I mean, I knew this is a big deal, so I need to get ready. So a couple of years, I'm like, okay, I'm ready. I've raised four kids practically on my own. I can do this kid thing. I can do it. So come on, God, let's go. Yeah, for a lot of years, like six.
And then all at once, it
all at once
kind of happens.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't tell you this story, but part of what we were trying to figure out is how do we get our name in there and how are they going to let us, strangers, take their kid? I mean, that's like craziness. And I was invited to speak at so there's two women's prisons in Raleigh. One is the one where the pregnant women are and the medium maximum people. And then there's kind of down the road, Little Raleigh, they call it, and it's the minimum security. They can never interact at all. No letters, no nothing. They're, whenever one has to go to the other campus, they keep everybody apart. So I was invited to speak to this other smaller one where the pregnant women aren't even there. But I thought, well, you know, it's a chance to tell my story again, and who knows. So one woman out of that group jumped up and she said, I got it. I know how we can get the word in there. Give me all those brochures. She said, we all get our hair done at the same place. So she went to the hairdresser, gave him the brochures, and said, send this out to every pregnant woman. I never saw that coming. We didn't know how to go to get to the real place. And this woman was like, yep. So within about a couple of months, my phone was ringing off the hook, as they say. I had to start telling women, no, I can't. DSS finally said, I can't give you any more babies. Can't do it. So that was, I knew there was a bad problem. I didn't realize it was that bad a problem.
Like the need was that great.
Oh, huge.
So yeah. How does it work?
Well, so after we got in then, and I finally got in touch with one of the social workers that work with the pregnant women and got our name in there that we were available. And most people go, okay, tell me again, you'll take these babies? I'm like, yep, that's what we do. So we connect with the mom. We try to vet them as well as we can with this distance of the prison. But if she qualifies, and one of the things is she can't have a violent crime, and there's a bunch of other things that she can and can't have done, then we get the phone call from the hospital after she's had the baby. We cannot see her. We can see her in prison, but we can't overlap. So we have to wait until we get the final call that she's actually been transported back to the prison, then we're allowed to go pick up the baby. So at this point, they're allowed 24 to 48 hours with the baby. So this baby's 1 or 2 days old. And we have car seats and we go pick up this new little teeny baby and we bring this baby home and we love this baby like our own. And we take this baby to see his or her mama every week. One of the big things is to keep the bond going. We want to leverage that so that she still has this like reason to succeed. And you know how cute little babies are, right? So we take them every week. We take pictures. We send a packet of pictures every month. We can't take cell phones in there, so there's no videos. But, you know, we share with them the milestones and all the cool things that you normally you're there for when you're the mom or the dad. So we try to keep them in their life as much as possible. She can call at any time, and we foot the bill for that. Prison phone calls are expensive. So we just keep that bond going. And then when she is released, we go pick her up. We have a little celebration, and we bring her home. And then depending on how comfortable she is as a mom, we've had some that have had kids before and some that this is their first one. And the only time they've ever held a baby was in the prison, which is pretty stiff. So you can't really do regular stuff with babies. But anyway, so they come home, and as she's comfortable, she takes over more and more of the parenting, the diaper changing, and, you know, all that.
Yeah, that's got to, I mean, it's, you have to be bonded with that baby.
Yeah. The tissues are on the front row. Yeah. And, you know, having come from a completely different culture, and, I mean, gosh, my mom's a child psychologist. I feel like I could, you know, challenge that bar. We raised our kids right. Okay, my kids are not perfect. But, you know, you kind of know. You're supposed to read to them. You're supposed to interact with them. You teach them manners, and you're there with them. You make eye contact. You know, the stuff that you assume everybody knows. And they don't know this stuff. They haven't been raised by a mom. So, you know, most of these grandmas, they've been passed out on the couch for most of the life of these kids. So they've never been trained. All the little things that your mama told you and that you passed on to your kids, the little things that you don't even think you're around for, you are. And these moms missed it all. They completely missed it all.
She said she had one mom whose daughter was coming up on her first birthday, and so she asked what she was going to do about it, and the mom replied,
yeah, she said, I want to have a birthday party for her. Well, of course, right? You're going to have a birthday party. I said, great, have at it. You just arrange it and everything. She was like, okay. I don't know how to do that. What do you do? What do you do at a birthday party? I'm like, whatever you did when you were a kid. I never had a birthday party. You're 27. You've never had a birthday party? Never had a birthday party. Never. Not one. Never went to one. I heard tell. There's balloons, right? Cake.
Nothing. Yeah, I heard that. I'm like, a lot of people in here have been to 8 birthday parties this week.
Right.
You know, if you have small kids, like, that just is right. What it is, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You also said that mom said her favorite holiday was Thanksgiving, but she'd never celebrated Thanksgiving.
Yeah, she couldn't wait to come home, come out and have Thanksgiving with us because we were now going to be her new family. And that's such a family thing. And I'm thinking, okay, she must have great memories. Come to find out, she's never celebrated Thanksgiving, but it's still her favorite holiday because it's family oriented. Yeah. It's rough.
This is, I mean, this is the gospel, you know, Christ left glory, became vulnerable to care for us who are vulnerable and to meet the needs of the vulnerable. And that's what he calls us to do. So just while we're like right here in this spot, I mean, that's what it is he rescues us and he calls us into what he's doing to rescue the people around us. And that involves sacrifice and, you know, caring for babies when you thought you were done caring for babies and just stepping down into caring for people that are vulnerable and in a vulnerable spot. And so, you know, get that. I guess this gets to that. You made a comment like, it's not sending these girls to charm school and it all gets figured out. You said for them, it's survival.
I mean, that's going back to all those nice romantic thoughts I had when this first, you know, the genesis of Pharaoh's daughters. Like, oh, my gosh, these guys are going to be, they're broken. They haven't been loved well. We're just going to love them well, kind of put them through the washing machine of Pharaoh's daughter, and they'll come out all pristine, and they can do their life. That ain't happening. And we have come down to like, okay, how can I best help you stay clean? How can I best help you with some life skills so that when the type of people you attract start hitting you or sexually abusing this baby that I love, how can God through us help equip you to make a better choice than your mom made? I mean, it boils down to really survival. Yeah.
You also, you also mentioned that you've seen, I mean, you told me this story probably a few months ago now. Like, I think you were, one of the moms had left, and so you didn't have any babies for a little while. And I forget why that was and isn't, but you were like trying to figure out what's going to happen next. And then on one morning, someone saw your like your car's all decked out with Pharaoh's daughter stuff
right.
on
you
it, Pharaoh's
it.
Daughter flair on
yeah,
it. And,
right?
And so a woman that is in one of those government areas, like saw your thing and got an email about you in the same morning
yeah.
and it changed the way that your ministry is working. Like, so you've yeah. seen God.
Absolutely.
His hand doing
yeah.
stuff like now.
Yeah. 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 So most of you know me, I just moved here last summer from Chatham County, which is about 45 minutes from here. So I had a pretty good solid volunteer base and you know, we were plugging along with getting the babies first and having some help with the 24/7 care until the moms got. So we were plugging along and then God moved us over to Raleigh. And then kind of one by one, you know, the volunteers were like, I can't make it. That's kind of too far. And so, and the mom that I had brought to Raleigh with me had moved on out of the program and she and her daughter. And so I had this empty house and I'm like, you know, every time we have this breathing space, we step back and go, okay, what do we want to change? What went right? What went wrong? So I'm kind of doing this thing and I'm thinking, you know, I'm marketing for Pharaoh's daughter, talking to everybody I know. We need volunteers. We need, you know, a lot of interest. Not a whole lot of people for, you know, their own life situations are on board. So I'm saying to God, all right, well, you got to help me with the 24/7 thing. I can't do this myself. It was real plain. So gosh, there's so many parallels with the Moses story and the Pharaoh's daughter that I didn't even know about when God said, name it this. But so I'm in this parking lot. I had parked and gone to do some business. And a woman who runs a drug program here in Raleigh, and that program is that people who do get a drug charge, they get the option, if they qualify, to do this like outpatient kind of drug program in lieu of their sentence. And if they do well, then the sentence is erased. If they don't do well, then they have to go do their sentence. So she had one pregnant woman in this program who was at the hospital, had just had her baby. And the place where she had come from had drug activity going on, and it was horrible. I mean, these addicts were living there, not taking care of the place, and she knew DSS would never let her take her baby back to this place. No way. So she was looking at losing her baby. So the mom was like, please, please help me find a place. Well, there are places in Raleigh, but they don't take babies. So she's a woman of God, and she was like, God, you got to help me with this. So she saw the magnets on my car and said, oh, maybe that is the answer. I will call. I'll look at that website as soon as I get to the office. Well, she gets to the office. She opens up her emails first, and one of the people that she had reached out to, who is a friend of mine, who is one of these places that will take adults but not children, she had written her back and said, oh, I'm sorry, I can't take her because she has a baby. But, hey, you should contact my friend Susan Henson from Pharaoh's Daughter. And that woman goes, wait, Pharaoh's Daughter? Wait, that was the van I just saw. So she jumped online. She reached out to me. And lo and behold, again, like the Moses story, God supplied this 24/7 care of this baby by providing its very own mother. So I got the mother and the baby straight from the hospital, and she began doing the 24/7 care, just like Moses' mother took care of him for the first few years. Goosebumps.
Yeah. There are a few verses, a handful of verses that you mentioned, and a few that I'm just going to read through that God has used over these, since 8 years, a little over 8 years. In speaking to you about this, one is from Isaiah 54. Sing, O barren one who did not bear, break forth into singing and cry aloud, you who have not been in labor. For the children of the desolate one will be more than the children of one who is married, of her who is married, says the Lord. Enlarge the place of your tent, and let the curtains of your habitations be stretched out. Do not hold back. Lengthen your cords and strengthen your stakes. For you will spread abroad to the right and to the left, and your offspring will possess the nations and the people, the desolate cities. Fear not. For you will not be ashamed. Be not confounded, for you will not be disgraced. For you will forget the shame of your youth and the reproach of your widowhood. You will remember no more. For your Maker is your husband. The Lord of hosts is his name. And the Holy One of Israel is your Redeemer. The God of the whole earth he is called, for the Lord has called you. Like a wife deserted and grieved in spirit, like a wife of youth when she is cast off, says your God. What was it about that verse? Like, how is he?
Everything. The husband, it spoke to me, even though I have children, but I was deserted by my own husband. And like God's in there going, I got this. I got you. And then also for the other women who are desolate and like they don't even know where they're turning. So that really, actually, it was my mother-in-law who on one of our prayer times on the Sunday morning said, the Lord really spoke to me in this. And read it, and then later I read it again, and it just penetrated into my heart. That was both, you know, as God often does. It was a message to me, and it was a message to all the women that come through Pharaoh's Daughter.
Another one was Jeremiah 29. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will hear you. You'll seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I'll be found by you, declares the Lord. And I'll restore your fortunes and gather you from all the nations and the places where I've driven you, declares the Lord, and I'll bring you back to the places from which I sent you into exile.
That seems to be the life verse of every woman that comes through prison. I mean, if she's gone through any religious, you know, Bible studies or whatever, you're like, that's my life verse. And it really does speak to them. It's like, okay, I've messed up. I have a felony. There's a good chance I'll never be hired again. But God knows my future, and it's a future full of hope. So it does encourage the women who come out.
And the last one that I'll mention is Proverbs 31:8. Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute.
Yeah.
Which is basically like, get off your butt and do something.
Yeah, okay. Right. Yep, we're all called to do something, big or small, you know, if it's your neighbor or whatnot.
You have a big vision for Ferris Otter.
I do. It came to me in a big vision, and it's not anywhere near it right now. But, you know, to have a large home with lots of babies and lots of grandma types or baby lovers. You know, I see them, you know, like what is that restaurant with all the rocking chairs on the front porch? You know, like that's Pharaoh's daughter where, you know, they're out there just rocking babies. But, you know, I think it may look a little bit different now that I've done it. Actually, I think we have to need smaller groups with like a house mom. So a few houses that have, you know, three or four moms and babies, and then a house mother that can kind of be that mother that they never had. But I hear this all over the place. There is nothing like Pharaoh's daughter in this country. And so the bigger vision is, can we nail down Pharaoh's daughter NC to be the template for other places? Because these babies are washing down the river. And if you get the profile of most of the women that are caught up in the legal system, they've come through the foster care system, just bouncing from family to family. And so if we can keep these babies from just being numbers in this system that is so broken, then, I mean, what will we look like when we have, you know, when we can empty out the prisons of that second generation so we can stop this deadly cycle of incarceration, recidivism, poverty, all that. So, yeah.
And then I want to, we'll wrap up here with just some needs. And so you know, going through this list, you need prayer.
Mm.
And so you, like, there's a standing offer to join your 6:30 Sunday morning conference call. If you were a prayer, you would like to pray. But just putting Pharaoh's daughter on your list of things to pray for. You need money.
Yeah.
You said it actually isn't like you need rent, but the moms do get a lot of help.
They do.
And what you need is some stable monthly donors.
I'm amazed at how little outside, like extra money it takes to do this. Like you said, outside of the rent, because a lot of things are given to us from equipment, you know, used equipment. We love to tap into the moms that are done having babies. So we get equipment and clothes, and a lot of times it's like, okay, diapers and wipes. We'll cover you for diapers and wipes. So, I mean, we had a baby shower when this first got going, and I think I used those diapers and wipes from that one shower for like a year. So, you know, and then the formula comes on their WIC, and they're covered with Medicaid, you know, the moms and the babies. So really, when you think of running a household with, you know, 2-3 moms and 2-3 kids, it's kind of a shoestring. It's really not a lot, but in order to really be able to set up a budget and look ahead, it's good to know, oh, someone has made even a $5 or $10 donation, but monthly. They've said monthly, so we can count on that. So that's kind of the power of the monthly contribution.
How do they do that if they want to do that?
We have something through our website. So that's pharaohsdaughternc.org, and there's a, you know, a donate thing, and you just put your card in. Same thing probably as push pay.
Then there's some, like, how you're moving, and so you're waiting on God to where to move, and there's some flexibility in that, but packing and trucks and moving.
I was supposed to be out end of July, but the landlords have given grace because my mother's dying right now, and so I've got this dual focus happening. So they said, oh my gosh, take care of your family, and we've changed our mind. We'll rent to you month to month. So that was a surprise. I thought we'd be here for several years, and they decided they wanted to sell the house, so that's why we're having to move. But whenever that weekend comes, that will be helpful, and I just hope that my...
And then some and help with the babies.
Always help with the babies.
Always help with the babies.
And the moms, actually, too, need some mentoring or running errands. And, you know, those of you who run your kids around, you know you know, that by and by kind of lessons that, you know, you're just chatting in the car, just chatting. And you have an opportunity to talk about Jesus and those day-to-day things.
And we are, I mean, the church has started supporting Pharaoh's Daughter financially and would like to, when Susan gets a mom, because she requires the moms to go to church someplace, right? It doesn't have to be here, but it's like it's been here for, you've seen Susan with some different moms over the past several months.
Yeah.
And so what we'd like to do is, as soon as she finds out she's getting a mom, find out what she needs and then communicate that to you guys so that the, you know, before the mom even hits the doors of Oak City Church, the church has already reached out to the mom with whatever it is that she needs, which it sounds like might not be diapers or wipes because you have those stored up for several years. But whatever Susan tells us it needs to be, like, we're going to tell you that it needs to be. And that's when we tell you Pharaoh's daughter needs this, then that's what we need. We need you to buy it, like, right then, get it to us that Sunday so that Susan can get it to the mom before the mom ever gets here. So that the, like, you know, you get how that works. Like, we've reached out and loved her in the name of Jesus before she ever gets here, because Susan's going to make her come here, and that will make a big difference. Because church is a scary place, and you just have no idea what impression people have of church. And so those are some things that we're doing, but there, you know, she has, there are ways for you to get involved. If you feel like this is something that God wants you to get involved with, there's plenty of ways. And so your email is what,
Pharaoh's Daughter NC@gmail.com.
Susan at...
No, just Pharaoh's Daughter, NC, at
Gmail. Oh, Pharaoh's Daughter, NC, at Gmail.
Now, Pharaoh is spelled with an A on either side of the H. I didn't know that, really, until things started bouncing back. So, it's,
And she's also looking for board members as well. So, can you guys thank Susan for telling her story?
And thank you.
I mean, I wanted to tell this story because, and we talked about this, like, we want to make God look good, and I think this makes God look good. And I was even driving in this morning and listening to that song, Confident, that we've sung a few times, and our songs so often are looking forward to hoping that God is going to come through, and we're confident that God is going to come through, but we need to be looking backward for the ways that God has come through, and God has provided rescue. And so I think that's part of this story, and part of it is just a challenge of... You know, in some, this isn't, doesn't fit. There's a phrase, your mess becomes your ministry. And there's so often the things that God brings you through are the things that God is using to prepare you to help other people go through certain things. And that's what this is. And she's responded to, gosh, a big, big call, right? Like, big call. And so be challenged by that. And if God wants you to be a part of her big call, be a part of her big call. If God is calling you to something that you've been scared of and he's using this to poke you in the chest and say, see, then respond. Father, thanks for this morning. Thanks for Susan. Thanks for her ministry. Thanks for the ways that you have worked in her life, that you are working in her life, the ways that you are working through her, Lord. Thanks for bringing her here and giving us a chance to be a part of her story, Lord. And I pray for response, for conviction, for action, for us to be a part of what you're doing in the lives of these women and their children, Lord, and the chance to make a difference for generations. God, thank you for your goodness and for your faithfulness, for the gospel that you've rescued us and called us into, the ways that you are rescuing those around us. And we pray for your glory to be shown through this story. We love you and pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.